Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We focus on the Latinx prisons in the comic book industry,
with a strong special focus on strong female characters and creators. Hi guys, and welcome back to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 32, and we are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
We're right on time this time, huh?
Oh my god.
Yes, we are.
It's almost like we have a schedule.
Thank you for all of you listeners who are very patient with us when we do not stay on schedule. But you know, we are very important busy women.
We are. We definitely are. We've been on, as you guys know, it's been con season, so we've had a lot of things going on.
Yes.
And we still have one more event, right, to go?
We have one more event that we have scheduled so far. It's the Tiachuchas, Words Festival, which is on June 2nd in
Pacoima?
Pacoima, yes.
I think that's gonna be the first time going to Pacoima for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't believe I've ever been there.
So
I've heard a lot about it.
I've been to Pacoima quite often. Girls that I used to work with my previous job that I used to mentor, a lot of them lived out in the valley in the Pacoima area. So I've been there quite often. And then after that, there's nothing confirmed, but we still are waiting to hear back from San Diego Comic-Con to see if our panel was approved.
I hope it is. I think that'd be a totally different crowd. So yeah. I'm very excited. I really like how I'm seeing the diversity between how different they are each con.
Mm-hmm.
Each con has a completely different personality, and I'm really liking all the different personalities. It's been quite a ride, guys.
Yes.
And I'd have to say I think it's a direct it's Kristen's fault.
It's my fault.
Yeah, she's the one who, like, you know, has had all these connections and had us expand what we do. And so I think the growth has been directly Kristen's fault.
It all started because you effortlessly signed us up to East LA.
Yes.
Case. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we're going to share our Chisme de la Semana as a unit. We are going, and what's on your... what's the chisme, girls, about the cons?
What's the dirt?
What's
the dirt? Yeah. Some dirt right now.
So, go for it.
On Twitter, Gail Simone, who I follow, because she's really funny, but she tweets like on the hour, every
she's
hour.
Very active, actually.
She's
yes.
super active. But either way, she tweeted out that she likes Deadpool 2 better than Avengers. She even set up a poll on her, Twitter, and so far it seems to be, it seems to be that more people enjoy Avengers Infinity War more than they do Deadpool.
I'm in that camp firmly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers is better than Infinity
War. For me, yes, I enjoyed Infinity War better than Deadpool. I liked Deadpool. I loved Deadpool the first one. Mm-hmm. I liked the second one. I think I would give it another view. But I was thoroughly entertained. I didn't hate it. I just didn't think it was as good as the first one, but I've already talked to people who thought that it was better than the first one. So, I think that there's a lot of varying,
points of view.
Yeah. Opinions out there.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but yeah, also my brother said that the first one was better, but again, like you said, I have heard that the second one's better, so I haven't seen it, so I have no...
Very clashing views.
Wade and I were there on opening night.
Stuck in between your boobs.
Yep.
I saw that picture.
The most comfortable seat in the room.
Yep.
So I haven't seen Deadpool 2, so I'm reserving judgment. But we've all seen Avengers Infinity War, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have we talked about it?
No.
We just grazed over it because we didn't want to spoil anything.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's keep it at that because it hasn't even really been out for that long. It hasn't even been a month.
It was April 26th or 27th, so almost a month.
Almost a month.
Yeah.
I liked Avengers Infinity War. It felt like a 3-hour long trailer, though.
I actually didn't feel the 3 hours. For me,
I didn't either.
It felt really, I was just really emotional. Just, I think it was just too much death for me.
You all know that that is Sarah.
Too much death.
Too much death. That was
so depressed.
I wasn't surprised at. I mean, anybody who's read the comics.
Yes, that's the thing. Is that anyone that walked out of that movie and started getting on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, crying or complaining, what'd you do, whatever. I'm like, you know what? That's what you get. That's what you deserve for not reading the comics. To feel all this and not know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. I actually didn't want to read the book before seeing the movie. I wanted to see the movie and then read the book just because I always do this. I'm always like, the book was better. And so, you know.
Well, that's because the book is always better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always go in and, you know, I like to be surprised. So that's next on my reading list.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and the thing is that this movie didn't specifically follow one specific book. It was like kind of a conglomeration of the overall storyline, I think. Cause we saw him gathering the stones and then we saw the end result of that. But, Infinity Gauntlet is just, he already has all the stones and it's just, so.
Okay. So I said I wasn't going to get into it, but, but one of the things about Avengers Infinity War that, was like, when someone on Twitter said that basically someone was just all like, they put Thanos, first year economics major, who doesn't understand how agriculture works. we need to kill half the population, so resources can last.
Well, honestly, I mean, I understand why they had to change his motivation. Nobody sitting around that big round table, the big studio heads, I think was going to green light a movie where this big bad, total boss character is motivated by love. I can see, or infatuation with death. I can see why they changed it. Yeah, I'm still salty about that.
I'm so salty.
And actually Eddie too, he had a hard time, believing the motivation. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm just such a huge Thanos fan. I just glazed right over it and I just let the movie tell me whatever it wanted to. And I took it all line and sinker.
It let you whisper sweet nothing to you and you fell for it.
I sure did. I loved every minute of it.
I couldn't accept it. I honestly thought that was a disservice to his character, mm-hmm. but also I think it made him less compelling as a villain. I thought that was kind of like a, okay, so you turned him into the equivalent of, I guess, of a shitty dude bro. basically like what he was saying is like, stuff that is stuff that it's not compelling to me,
mm-hmm.
because it was frankly a little boring. I know like they wouldn't have greenlit like, oh, he's in love with death or he's motivated by love, infatuation and stuff like that, but that was more interesting to me than the shitty reason that he had.
That was interesting. In Infinity Gauntlet, it was interesting to me because it showed a vulnerability in Thanos, which is why I really enjoy his character. There's this, I know he's not human, but to me it was like this humanity component. Mm-hmm. And, I guess they kind of tried to access that in the movie through his relationship with Gamora, mm-hmm. which is how I interpreted that. But all the other stuff, like it not making sense of, you know, getting rid of half the people and, you know, the resources being more readily available if that was what was going to happen. for all the parts that it didn't make sense, in my mind, I just kept telling myself, well, he's the freaking Mad Titan. Of course it doesn't make sense. He's not right in the head. And then I just went on enjoying the movie.
Yeah, maybe because I was just listening to the song, Nobody's Right If Everybody's Wrong. So I'm like, he's going to have his opinion no matter what. I mean, even if it's not, you know, approved by the masses, or, you know, if people think he's just nuts, it's just, it makes sense to him. Mm-hmm. So.
So, this will be the last episode that Jen is part of. Come on, it's coming.
It was a good run.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.
So, yeah, so our chismes somehow turned into to Infinity War. But
anyways.
I definitely think we want to, is chismear an actual word?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, chismear.
About our conventions that we've done in the past couple of weeks. So we have just come off of a really amazing weekend at Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario. That was such a great convention.
I loved it.
And then the weekend before, we were at East LA Cape in East LA. So I probably, why don't we just go around and say what our favorite things were from each of those?
I'm going to go first. This is Sarah. I'm going to start with East LA Cape. East LA Cape, I really loved it this time around because the weather was a lot better.
Oh, yeah. Last year we almost died.
We died of heat. This time around, there was a light sprinkle during the day, mm-hmm. the morning, but also was we were outside, so it was a bigger con this year. Mm-hmm. So it didn't feel as crowded. So I really liked that. But mostly I loved about East LA Cape was it was like coming to visit family.
Yes.
Like mm-hmm. everybody remembered us, including the people that went to the con. They were mm-hmm. like, oh, we remember you from last year.
Yeah.
What happened to El Pan Dulce?
Yeah, like, where's the conchas?
Las conchas. We're like, oh, couldn't do it. Couldn't do the conchas. But it was overall wonderful. A lot of people came by our table and told us they started listening to us from the last year.
Yeah.
Because they met us at, East LA Comic Con. So that was awesome. That's the part I really loved. I was able to move around. That was cool.
Yeah, we had a booth. Yes. As opposed to all three of us being stuck behind a 6-foot table.
It was great.
And we had to crawl under to go to the bathroom.
Oh, we sure did. Yeah.
And we couldn't do that this year because Kristen's foot.
Yeah, so thank goodness.
Yeah, it was great. It was just great. It was overall great. We were like at the entrance, so we saw a lot of people come in and out. That was really cool. So that was my favorite part of East LA Cape. As far as Comic-Con Revolutions, I just love the whole thing. I love the whole thing because as soon as I got off the freeway, I found parking. $10 parking. It was great. And then I walked a little bit to the front and then we were, professional speakers. So because we were at the panel, so our line was super small.
Yeah.
Love that. got in, just waited outside our panel room, went in the panel, did our panel and then came out and as soon as I stepped into the hall, exhibitor hall, I saw Bishop from, I don't know what his real name is, the actor who plays Bishop in the Aliens movies.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, I kind of geeked out. And then
you were trying to tell us, I was like, what? I've never seen that movie.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
She got mad.
And I was like, what?
I lost some geek cred.
But it was just great. And then I had some coffee. I brought some coffee to some of the people who had tables who were moving mm-hmm. from their table. And it was just great. It was really like not that crowded, which I loved.
Yes.
Because some cons, it's like you can't even move.
Yes. And they had some really big names there, actually.
Mm-hmm, they did.
I wasn't able to go see Jason Aaron, which I really wanted to. And every time I was free, he wasn't at the table. But I'm really upset that I missed that opportunity. Because every time I did see him, the line was long, but probably nothing compared to what it's going to be like at any of the other bigger conventions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also had a regret. I didn't get a chance to see Kevin Conroy, who is my Batman. So there's that, but it was just great. Walking down the aisles, everybody was really friendly. It was really great. It was just wonderful. it was really chill.
Yeah.
As the kids say.
Yeah.
So that was my, that was my favorite part.
Cool. Well, this is Kristen. At East LA Cape, I think that my favorite thing, in addition to what Sarah was saying about all the people that came by our table and, told us that they started, that they listened and that they were fans and that they started listening from meeting us last year, that was really super cool. I always, no matter how many times this is gonna happen, I always, when people tell me that they listen, cause we, Jen and I actually have experienced people coming into the shop and saying, we listen to Kumasi Comics, and I know, and I'm like, oh, cool. And he'll say, I know you're Kristen because you have a broken foot. And I heard that episode. So, that was really cool. But what I really liked about it is it's just so cool to be around, Latino culture.
That's true.
To have this convention in the neighborhood, in a location where literally across the street we bought pan dulce, café de olla. I bought the chicharrones that we were eating all day.
So good.
We had breakfast burritos, and that was just, that wasn't some special thing that they brought in like at a food truck or whatever. That was part of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this convention is in the hood, in the trenches of where our consumer base that we're trying to reach, and to share stuff with, is, I really enjoy. Cause even Latino Comics Expo, that's amazing and I love it, but it's at a museum in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the same. And I really enjoyed the feeling of being there amongst the people.
yeah, and you know, to reiterate on that, as a matter of fact, there was a guy who was selling t-shirts that he made himself across the street, and he came down talked to us, at our table. He's like, I saw your banner, and I saw the pan dulce, and I came over to talk and see what was it about, and I'm like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, people just walking down the street, and su barrio, and then come down and, you know, talk to us. It was great.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
And there were actually quite a few people that said, I didn't even know this was happening today, mm-hmm. and I just saw it out here, and like Sarah said, they had to expand into the parking lot this
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
That's how successful last year was. And so we were out in the parking lot, and so a lot of people who didn't know that this was going on came through us first, because they just happened to be walking down the street
mm-hmm.
and saw all the canopies and people hanging out. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the fact that we had people coming up to us saying, hey, I know you're Kumasi Comics, please review my book, or please, you know, this is what I do, and you know, let's have some sort of collaboration. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, the dialogue between us and people was just amazing. I mean, there was this one guy who, you know, was smoking a cigarette, and he's like, will you review my comic book? And I'm like, sure. And he's like, well, how do I write one?
I remember that.
I remember.
And we referred him to the Sketchy Bugs.
Right. And then at the end, when we were waiting for you to come by with the car, when we had all our stuff in the front, he came towards me and he's like, hey man, thanks a lot for that referral. I'm going to get to work on my comic book.
Oh, that's
and I'm like,
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We actually got a whole feedback from, you know, like his start to finish.
So
now I feel like compelled to, you know, read his comic book, not just because if it comes to fruition, I think, you know, somos la madrina is there.
Well, we'll definitely deserve some space on his dedication page. And then really quickly, just for Comic-Con Revolution, this is the second year that I've been. It's the second year that they have had the convention, and I also enjoy the fact that it's a smaller convention. It's not super crowded. You're able to just see everything that you want to see. All of the Artist Alley people were so friendly and nice and cool. But I have to say, my favorite thing, I'm going to give a shout out to Geeky and Kinky. It is a
Oh my God, I was there for this.
It's a company who takes geeky, I guess, characters. Like, for example, there were some Star Wars kind of images, like a lightsaber. There was all the characters from Scooby-Doo. And then there was a Batman and Spider-Man and Godzilla. And so all of these characters that I'm telling you were all made into enamel pins, but they weren't just made into enamel pins of their regular the way that they appear in whatever franchise that you've seen them in. There is a kinky aspect. So for example, all of the Scooby-Doo characters, Velma, Fred, Daphne, I think even Scooby got in on it a little bit, they all were tied up or bound in some BDSM type of way. There was a Star Wars lightsaber that at the end of it was a big red penis. And there was a,
dick saber.
Yeah. There was a penis that was, designed to look like Godzilla. And it was called Cockzilla.
I can't believe you.
That was my favorite acquisition of the con. A huge shout out to Geeky and Kinky, and I think their website is just simply geekyandkinky.com. And they have all of these available online as well. And I have to tell you, the way that they were kind of in the corner, way in the back, and we were just walking down the aisle, and I was walking with Jen, and Jen said, "Kristen, look!" And I just saw the sign, and I think there was a kind of a blown up picture of Velma tied up, and I said, "Oh my gosh!" And I just made a beeline over there. Yes. And I bought four pins. So that was my favorite Comic-Con Revolution experience. But we did two panels. We did the Latinx panel, and then Jen and I did the Tales from the Comic Shop panel, and that was really fun.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
I ended up live streaming it on Facebook.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it was really cool.
Yeah.
I laughed. I laughed. I cried. I peed on myself. It was great. It was really cool. And you know what? I just to reiterate on that, the whole Artist Alley, I really love the way they laid out the Artist Alley. So it was all the vendors outside.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then the Artist Alley was in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Took me by surprise. I was like, what? But it was it was cool. It was cool. Good planning.
This is Jen. And for East LA Cape, and you know what? This just occurred to me because of when you had talked about Comic-Con Revolution, is my favorite thing, one of my favorite things about East LA Cape was the food.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I say this because we don't know Ontario, so when we went to Comic-Con Revolution, it was in Ontario, and we had no idea where to go eat.
Yeah.
Whereas with East LA Cape, I could not throw a freaking stone without hitting something.
Right across the street.
Right across the street, the next building over, I was surrounded all sides.
Yeah, all sides, yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention that kid who came around with
his little... That's right!
Oh, my God.
Oh, my, he got all my money. He was such a great salesman.
At first, I remember at the beginning when we were getting the first Coke of the day.
Yeah.
There's this kid with this kind of like this can or some kind of thing with wheels on it. A tub that he was pushing with like, you know, drinks and stuff and chips. And at first he's like, "Do you want a Coke?" Like really shy.
Yeah.
By the end of it, he was like winking at us.
Yeah.
He was telling us, "You know you want this Coke."
And he succeeded in selling us, I think, at no less than like, I know I had three that day.
I had two, I had three Cokes too. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I don't know about you, Jen, but, and at the end of the day, he was selling me nachos I didn't even want.
That kid was awesome.
I didn't drink any soda that day.
Oh.
I was trying to cut back. Oh, I don't know what I was doing. I was drinking coffee.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We had big old cups of coffee.
Yeah. So, then we had chicharrón.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I had a tamale stashed in my bag. I was just like, we had pan dulce from the bakery across the street.
Yes.
We had breakfast, like, two buildings over that does these great burritos.
With the not tamales.
The breakfast burritos,
with,
right? Nopal, right?
Nopal, yeah. I wanted to return because everybody who was familiar with that restaurant raved about their burrito with the
chile relleno.
Yeah, with the chile relleno.
Chile relleno, mm-hmm, burrito.
And I wanted to go back, and I just never got the opportunity to.
Yeah, and they closed early.
Mm. Yeah, they did.
I mean, they opened early, but they also closed early. Mm-hmm. But oh my god, that was one of my fave things about it. Like, I was gonna say something else, but no,
let's be real. Yeah,
let's be real here. There was a lot of food that you could have gotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I very much appreciated that. But I also really enjoyed the new slew of content that we were able to get because. It wasn't just that the fact that they had to expand to the next lot to fit more room for creators and stuff like that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they kind of like changed the roster up a bit, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. So we saw some of the same guys. Lalo was there. We need to get into
Lalo. Yeah.
Oh my god, that was the coolest thing, right?
Saying this every single one. Yeah. Like, oh my god. Anyways, Lalo was there. The guys who did the children's storyboard books. Was there. Fan base press was there. We were there. So there was a lot of the people that we saw last year and who recognized us and who some of them who listened to our podcast.
And a lot of them whose book we reviewed from last year, who we've become actually, you know, quite friendly with and have had, built ongoing relationships with. I thought that was really cool.
That was super
cool. Right. Exactly.
I was still able to find at least three new books to pick up, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And then we found a Swamp Thing, or no, a Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, yeah.
Art for Kristen.
And we actually, that same artist was at Comic-Con Revolution
at
as well.
Comic-Con Revolution as well. Yeah. So that was really, really cool, and that's another aspect that I really liked about East LA Cape is that they're switching it up a little bit. Mm-hmm, so who knows if we'll make the roster again next year?
But yeah,
I hope we do. But I also would not be sad at all if they have a lot of new content.
Yeah,
even more new content, which is pretty cool. For Comic-Con Revolution, I did enjoy very much that it was a lot more intimate.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes,
it was a lot smaller, a lot smaller than like the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Yes,
mm-hmm. I've been once to the San Diego Convention Center, not for San Diego Comic-Con, for another reason, and other like smaller cons that I've been to were somehow bigger than this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, I think, because of the area that I'm in, or just like what I see as small and what other people see as small.
Right, yeah.
Different. But it definitely felt a lot more intimate, and it was really, really cool. I liked that a lot. What I really liked, though, was the fact that it was a small one, but they had a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. Like Aaron, Marv Wolfman, Kevin Conroy. They had three voice actors from Overwatch, which I went to go see their panel.
Nice.
They had, oh god, there was somebody else. Their name escapes me right now. But they had a lot of like really cool talent.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my god, this is amazing. And that was just really, really cool. And I did like the format as well of how they had the Artist Alley in the center instead of like split off to the side.
Yeah.
So it was more like a highlight on the Artist Alley, mm-hmm, whereas it's sort of like the step kid you kind of put off to the side.
Yeah. Other cons. God. Not Emerald City. That's why I really like Emerald City.
Oh,
Emerald
cool. City's cool. Right on.
But that's what I really liked about Comic-Con Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? You are absolutely right about the whole food situation because, unless you were eating inside and then they ran out of the pizza is what I heard, because it was either pizza or hot dogs, and the hot dogs were one of those,
and really dry looking sandwiches.
Oh yeah, I didn't even look at the sandwiches.
Yeah.
There was not much of a selection, and then what, the better of the all three was, they ran out right away, mm-hmm, so we ended up walking to, Marie Callender's, which took us forever. It was like, it was a mission for
sure. It was a third of a mile per my GPS, but the GPS literally showed the dot in the middle of a field. And so we walked around the long way in my walking boot and with my pink cane. So it felt like a really, really long walk. But we realized after we finally found it that we went the long way and that there was a much shorter way to access Marie Callender.
Yes. Yes. But it was kind of okay food. Even though we went to Marie Callender's,
the pie was good.
I enjoyed my pie. I enjoyed my pot pie, partly because it didn't have an inside crust, but whatever.
My pasta was.
Oh yeah, she didn't like her pasta.
Right. It was watery.
So that's all to say that East LA Cape Food won hands down.
Yeah, hands down. They won by like, as soon as I saw that we could order chicharrón, I was just like, sign me the fuck up.
Yep, as soon as I saw that it was on the menu, she actually pointed it out to me. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I went and I said, can you order? Are they done? And they're like, no, sorry, they're not ready. I'm like, well, when will they be ready? I'm like, can I buy it now and come back for it? Because I know that when you have good chicharron, they sell out, mm-hmm. and they only have so much per day. So I'm like, just let me buy it, and I'll come back whenever you tell me.
Text me, I'll come back.
Yeah. Yes, because I we have a El Superior or Numero Uno or whatever in Torrance, but.
This was way better though.
No, I think it's Numero Uno. I don't know. It's a grocery store in Torrance. It's more close to Harbor Gateway that has really good chicharrón.
Gotta try that. But no, the chicharrón you had was really good, really, really good. Mm. And then for lunch, I think we had carnitas and asada burritos mm-hmm. that we all shared with delicious. But yeah, originally I went over there to go get quesadillas and they ran out. So we're like, how do you run out of quesadillas? And it's like, well, you purchase some fresh ingredients.
Yep.
And then they, you know, once mm-hmm. they, you know, they're good,
once
people
you're
come,
out, you're,
you're out.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, that was our chisme de las, del East LA Cape and Revolutions.
Beer! I could not refuse a beer! I could really use a beer! Beer! Beer!
All right, guys, what time is it now? Is it like beer time?
It is beer time.
Yes.
So
it's always beer time.
We today are trying beer called, well, it's from the brewery, and it's Brewery, B-R-U-E-R-Y. I believe we've had a couple of beers from Brewery before here. If not, it's just because I'm familiar with it because they have, I don't remember what it's called, but they have one that I usually get if I see it. Mm-hmm. But it is called, it says Brewery Terreux, T-E-R-R-E-U-X, and it is called Frederick H. So, from their brewery website online, it says, we are on a first name basis with our new German style tart wheat beer. Meet Frederick H. And then in parentheses it says, the H stands for Hottenroth. But this isn't Fred as you knew him with Sarah. Who's Sarah?
That's what I want to know. It's probably another beer.
Okay. It says this is a Berliner Weiss with an entirely different personality. So, if you know Berliner Weisses, they are tart beers. They're wheat beers. They have a very tart finish to them. So it says at his core, I like how they're referring to the beer as, with his pronouns,
right?
At his core, Frederick H. embodies some of the elements you'd expect in a Berliner Weiss style beer, but as a tart flavor profile from lactobacillus and a hint of Brettanomyces, boy, we're talking science and chemistry here today, and a traditionally low ABV. Listeners, just per that description, I'm out. Low ABV? Yeah. What the heck am I drinking beer for?
I know. I think it's a 4-point something.
It says he gets a little racy, though, and gains even more funky and earthy notes from house cultures and fermentation in our Oak Fodders at Brewery Tarot. After nature takes its course, Frederick H. emerges with a bright, refreshing body, palate-cleansing tartness, and an au naturel rawness. That sounds sexy. You could say the complexity of Frederick H. has reinvented our outlook on the style. In fact, he's now a mainstay in our lineup. So that is what we'll be trying today. It is in a... It's in a bottle, and it is 12.7 fluid ounces. So, where did you acquire this one? Yes.
Oh, actually, this is an interesting story.
Can't get it open. Okay, there we go.
She can't get it open.
Smells good.
Oh, cool. Right on.
I made my mouth water.
That's what she said.
Cause I know it's gonna be tart.
I actually went, my nephew lives in Long Beach, and so we were on Long Beach Boulevard, no, Atlantic Boulevard, and we happened to be walking, I found a parking spot in front of the barbershop because he needed his haircut, but then they only take cash. So we ended up walking to
the
Chase.
The barber only takes cash?
Yeah, so okay. We went walking to Chase.
Old school.
And as we were walking to Chase, I saw this place that says the largest craft beer refrigerated section in LA or something uh-huh. like that. Like something really off the charts.
Yeah.
And I told my nephew, I want to go in here. He goes, no, don't go in there. And I'm like, come on. I'm just going to take a video. So I went in there and it was really beautiful. I'm actually going to post a video.
And this was in Long Beach?
Yes. And okay. It's called Corked.
Corked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's huge. It's beautiful. It's really fancy in there. Anyway, I was overwhelmed by their entire beer selection, but I chose this one because I thought, you were into wheat beers. So
I am into wheat beers. I'm not into tart beers, but I have had some Berliner Weisses in the past that I have liked, so we will see. My mouth is watering just from the smell of it, because I know what Ooh. I'm going to get when I drink it, and so I'm trying to prepare myself. But just to backpedal a little bit, yes, old school businesses in 2018 that do not have PayPal or Square or something, forget it. Like, I'm out. Like, if I can't Venmo you or PayPal you or you can't take my card, then what are you even doing in business? I'm sorry. Right. It's 2018.
Yeah, and it's true, but you know, like, I do need exercise, so, and I really wanted to see the shops around, and I found a really crazy little, kind of crazy little, cheese shop.
Tea?
Oh, a tea place and a cheese shop.
Tea or cheese?
Cheese,
okay.
Cheese, queso.
Queso. Queso.
It's queso because they have a lot of French stuff and weird cheeses.
But it's fromage. Oh no, that's not French. That's Italian. Fromage. Fromaggio.
Fromaggio. And then I saw a tea place, which I want to go back to, like a little tea room, and then you can there's a little dance floor, so I want to look into that. But it's cool. It was a really cute little place to walk through. So I like the walk.
So this beer, that's all to say, has come all the way from the streets of Long Beach.
Long Beach.
Okay.
De la Playa Larga.
Here we go. I can't do it. I want to wait till you guys do it.
Well, I love it. My I love it. It's totally different.
My mouth is like watery.
Cheers.
There we go.
Oh my God. I should have recorded the faces,
Oh my gosh.
You guys are, this is so funny. Oh man. They finished their water too.
Oh my goodness. It's so tart and sour. Like some people love this crap.
They love the taste of vomit in their mouth.
And I can't okay, so this beer to me, this is Kristen, tastes like somebody got, what are those candies where you, okay, it tastes like they put those like sweet and sour, what are those? Warheads. They opened up a warhead and just poured all the middles into a glass and added water. That's what this tastes like to me.
I'm going to be a little bit more visceral. The one time that I remember getting pass out drunk from, like not, I didn't pass out, but I was very close to it, and I remember this. I remember regurgitating, aka vomiting up all the alcohol that I
took. Aka vomiting.
throwing up, and that taste of the alcohol coming back up. That's what this tastes
yes!
like.
Yes!
That's what this tastes yes! like to me, and I'm not gonna touch that.
You are, you know what? This You're right.
This tastes like how when I throw up, it tastes a combination of bile and the alcohol. And I'm not about that. And that's what sour beer or tart beers taste like to me. Even, I don't know if Kristen may have noticed the face I made when I smelled it. It smelled like it. I was...
Oh, well, this is Sarah, and I really enjoyed it.
Listen,
okay,
if look, this was...
This podcast is just going to be Kristen herself.
Because now you're out. Okay, listen, if this was a 7, maybe even a 6.4, I'll start at 6.4. 6.4 and up, I would choke this shit down just for the buzz. But a 4 is not worth it. And you know what? Come at me if you like tart beers. I will take a hoppy IPA over this any day.
You know what? I'll take the hops. I'll take the hops over this. Oh my god.
Whew, I still actually have water. You can want some water. You can pour some in there.
I can taste it. It's my 22nd birthday all over again.
And it says best served in a tulip or wine glass. So we have one of these chubby tasters. So
oh, is that what's wrong? We drink it out of the wrong glass.
Does when we pour it in a wine glass or something transform the taste?
Well, I'm going to have the rest of this. You guys...
Does the high end finally come out, or what's the deal?
Well, I enjoyed it. It has like the aroma is reminiscent of pulque from Tlatelolco, Puebla.
What is that?
Pulque?
I know what pulque is.
Is that Spanish for throw up?
I said the smell.
The smell. The smell does not smell like pulque.
Yes,
What is pulque?
Pulque is not really something that I actually like. It's something I can't even explain it. I just know that people drink it.
Is it something to eat? Something to drink?
Oh, something to drink.
Okay.
It gets you drunk, but I'm not sure what the process is, but I knew the smell of it because there was a pulqueria across the street from where my grandma lived.
Hold up. I might have to backtrack.
Okay.
Pulque to you is a beer.
No,
or
it's not a beer.
Something to drink.
Yeah, something to drink. Oh, is pulque something different in your country?
Yes.
Oh,
pulque is a food.
Oh, I see.
When
okay.
you said pulque, I was just like...
You're like, bish? No. We're going to have words, bish.
We're going to have words. Okay.
No, oh, no. Pulque is
Spanish
a...
once again. Oh, God.
Spanish.
Hey! They, Brewery Tarot has a beer called Chupacabra Quinceañera.
Oh, we gotta do that.
Yeah, it is, I don't know what kind of, it's on the front it says Lupulo Escalofrio Friante and Tropical.
Tropical.
Uh-huh. And it says 100% Bretanomyces, which is what some of this had in it too, but it's a very pretty bottle. I'm trying to figure out which is the brewery, beer that I've had before that I enjoy, but I cannot find it.
Well, the brewery in itself, they're really well known for their beers and, there's a lot of great, I remember tasting one that had, I think, dark berries in it. It's delicious. But there's a tasting room at 1174 North Grove Street in Anaheim, California. So they also have tasters, like little chubby tasters for like $2.
Can you get a chubby taster for $2 in Hollywood?
Dude, I totally set myself up for that one. Oh man. Jesus. Well, yes. Okay. So, in any case, They're very well known for like their myriad of wonderful beers. And I thought,
lies.
Well, just because of this one, it doesn't mean that they're all, I mean, this is style of
beer. I do remember that there is a beer from brewery that I enjoy, but I can't find it on the website. So maybe it was seasonal.
They have some great chocolate stouts too, I believe. Anyway, they have a myriad of flavors, but, I chose the brewery because I wanted to kind of keep our beer tasting local, just in case anybody wants to go, find these beers.
But we're on iTunes and Podomatic, so people all over the world are listening.
In any case,
opening my mouth. Right. Definitely not at the club level.
But because we do beer reviews on this podcast, I thought we'd try a different type of beer. So
I appreciate that.
I do appreciate the fact that you brought something different because we have been doing a lot of barrel aged stouts and stuff like that and IPAs.
I actually had a beer that I was going to bring from a local brewery. The Strand, which is a brewery across from where I am, has a seasonal called Little Bear IPA, and it's really good. Mm. It's really, really good. And so, and I have some cans at home, and I was going to bring one, and this morning I rushed out and I forgot it, and I didn't have time to stop back by before I came.
So that's what we're drinking next podcast. I just thought I'd open us up to different stuff, because I know for a while we were doing a bunch of Monkish, and then we got stuck in the, kind of like barrel age stuff, which I love.
Yeah.
But we want to open it up for a variety of things, so this just didn't fly with you guys. So we're ready to rate it. By the way,
yes,
audience, they just gave me all their beer.
Yes, all the little chubby tasters are standing in front of her.
At attention.
Oh man, you said yeah. Now that I think about it, I think chubby tasters, and I think of a sweaty, hairy, chubby guy with the chubster. okay, so we're ready to rate, guys.
Yes. So this is Kristen, and our rating scale goes from flaccid to rigid, and then Super Saiyan on the very top. If it is something amazingly spectacular, and I have to say, I don't know, like, I'm not even flaccid, like, my rating is full on vagina.
Oh, so
it's
inverted.
Yes.
It retreated. Oh, so it's sort of, okay, so there was one guy that I dated for a bit, and he was doing,
I feel like I need to stop this right now.
and he had a meth addiction.
Oh.
So whenever he did it, his penis would kind of retreat.
Interesting.
Into him. Yeah.
I wouldn't think about that with meth, because meth is like, gives you like all this energy or whatever, and I would think the opposite. So that's very interesting.
Well, I mean, after you do it for a while, I think at the initial
time. Oh, it really affects your biology. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
So he'd be like, look at this. And it would be like, it could.
Oh my gosh.
And you could like make a vagina.
Oh my god.
Like, it would just, you know, like crypto chido.
Just say no, kids. If there was any story that you've ever heard to steer you away from drugs, that was it.
But I could see why you're rating that.
So Jen, now what is your rating?
Now, you see, for me, vagina would be above Super Saiyan.
Right.
Okay. See what I'm saying?
Well, I just meant like something lower than flaccid, like was the complete absence of a penis. So that was vagina.
It's like shrinkage.
Yes.
Oh my god. But it's, oh my god, this is definitely a flaccid for me.
Yeah.
It's not. I can't even say anything positive. I think my description of it being the throw up of alcohol after my 22nd birthday is enough to cover it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
I'm sorry, Sarah.
No, it's okay. It's okay. This is Sarah, and I enjoyed it. I really did. From the initial smell of the tardiness and the hint of pulque from Tlatenango, Puebla in Mexico, to the, it's an explosion of tart. around my tongue, and then a hint of berries of some sort. But yes, I am disappointed that it's only a 4.4.
Yeah.
Because I drink beer to get at least a buzz.
Yeah. Well, I, like, if it's a pilsner or a lager 4.4 with lots of flavor, I mean, admittedly, this has a F ton of flavor. Like, it's full of flavor. It's just not, it's not flavor that I want in my mouth. But,
in or around your
mouth. I feel like this was like super painful. And to have to go through that pain and still not get a buzz off of it, it was just not for me.
Well, for me, my rating, I think I'm going to go partial, only because, yes, it is a 4.4, mm-hmm. and that's kind of disappointing. The flavor, it's good. I enjoyed it. I like tartiness, but this is something that I would bring to a beer share. Like when I'm sharing beer with other people, and we open
me
this
too.
Bottle.
Take this, please.
And we open this beer, and we each have a taster amount.
Yeah, and then nobody admits that they're the one that brought it.
Wow. Okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I would not drink a whole bottle of this on its own,
yeah.
Let alone two in a row.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely
a taster beer.
Although I mean, there are people out there, and I'm sure some of you listeners love tart beers. Sours, are a huge thing in the craft brew industry. So I know that there's people out there that like that. I know there's a market for them. It's just not me. So definitely don't take, if you are partial to sours and tarts and you know that you like it, do not take my rating with any kind of credibility, because you probably will like it.
Same.
All right. Well, that was our beer review, guys. All right, guys, now it's time for our book review. What are we reviewing today?
Well, today we have actually something that we picked up at Latino Comics Expo. And that was, geez, that was already been some time, so we're a little
year.
Bit behind.
Yeah.
No, it was in November.
Oh, that's right, you're
about
right.
6 months or so.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Did we pick this up at Latino Comics Expo? We met. Her,
uh-huh.
Latino, and you bought.
I bought a whole bunch for the store.
You did it for Free Comic Book Day.
I met her at Latino Comics Expo.
Okay, yeah.
And I had those books that whole time. Because they were in my box of stuff that I got at Latino Comics Expo. So, the fact that I knew she was coming, I had to dig them out and put them on the wall. Sorry, Melina. That's the truth. But, thanks a lot, Jan. But so, yes, we picked it up at Latino Comics Expo, but the creator, well, one of the creators, the writer, Melina Chavarria, she was also at East LA Cape this year. I also had the pleasure of having Melina on the panel that I moderated, Latina Power.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
At Latino Comics Expo as well. So.
And she was our guest at our booth.
Yes.
At Free Comic Book Day at Hattie Hole.
Yes.
Comic Con this last May 5th.
Yes. So.
She was awesome.
The book that we are reviewing is The Magic Glasses, written by Melina Chavarria and art by Jean Munson. So, on the back of the book, and it's a self-published book. Did she do a Kickstarter? I don't remember if she did or she didn't. But on the back of the book is a little description. It says, The Magic Glasses is about a young Latina growing up in a world obsessed with social media and public opinion. Heidi just graduated high school and is uncertain about what she wants to do with her life. She spends most of her time playing video games all day and partying with friends all night. Her mom is doing the best she can to instill Christian values, but Heidi questions God's existence. Brace yourself as Heidi begins the adventure towards finding the magic glasses.
Can I start?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I met Melina at our booth.
Uh-huh.
That was the first time I met her. And she's just a really elegant woman. And her conversations was just like amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, and when she described the book to somebody else that came to the table, mm-hmm. I was like, why haven't I read this? So, I read this comic book and I gotta say, I hated Aide, Heidi. Mm-hmm. But ask me why.
Why, Sarah? Why did you hate her?
I hated her because she reminded me of me. Back in my 20s, I also had the same conversations with my mom, and I also only wanted a party, and I didn't play video games, but I did go out a lot, and I just wanted to have fun, and I didn't feel that I needed to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, because I felt I was still young, but I didn't take under account that my mom had me when she was 18, so mm-hmm. she had to do a lot of growing up a lot sooner than I did.
Yeah.
So this is why I felt so strongly against this character, was because it was a direct reflection of what I was. And thinking about it, I'm thinking, man, I don't know why I even had friends, because I sucked. I would hate me if I met me, you know, at that age. So it felt really kind of like a mirror, like a reflection mm-hmm. of myself, and exactly the same thing. Like my parents would be like, maybe you should go to, you know, to church and stuff. And I'm like, but why? I'm so goth. I'm going to combust into flames or something. You know, like it was just awful. Like I was such an awful, way of thinking, and I was just stuck in my own world. And, but I really love, the development of the story in this book, mm-hmm. because even though we don't really get to see what the glasses do yet.
Yeah.
I really love how it closed this first issue with the relationship with the interaction she had with Jesus. Mm-hmm. I thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. for me, I love this book and I can't wait to read the rest of the story.
This is Kristen. I definitely think what you're saying is very valid, in that I think we've all been Heidi, growing up and having interactions with our parents and questioning, the values that our parents have and how they fit into who we are, who obviously are from a completely different, generation. And in some cases, especially with Latino families, sometimes from a completely different culture, in that, yes, you all share the same Latino culture, but there's a huge difference between Latino culture who grew up in the quote unquote old country and the Latino culture that is trying to assimilate here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this book really did a good job of touching upon a lot of the realities of what it's like to be a young 20 something trying to find her place in life. And it really reminded me actually of Molly, the cat sitter, which was similar, story ideas, and that we also really enjoyed because we really identified with it. So, I don't have similar experiences like what you're saying, and I know Jen is gonna share too, as far as, religion and that. Although I remember my mother trying to force me to go to church and was mad at me because I had friends who were Christian and we were Catholic and I wanted to go to youth group. And she's like, no, we're Catholic. You don't go to a Christian youth group. You go to Catholic youth group. I'm like, listen, lady, I don't care about the actual religion part of it. I just want to go hang out with my friends. But, I remember that being a big point of contention, that she didn't want to let me go because it wasn't Catholic. So, but yes, I also really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the voyage that we are going on. I was really upset that it ended and that we didn't see more. I want to know, like, it's called Magic Glasses, but you don't really get much of what that means in this first issue, like how important that is or why it's called Magic Glasses. So,
yeah, and I actually would love, now that I have read this book, I would really like the chance to speak to her and ask her where she got most of this inspiration from. Mm-hmm. Most of the time while I was reading it, like every little kind of sentence or a dialogue bubble that mm-hmm. they would talk. It was like, oh, I want to smack her. Like, that's how I felt.
Not me.
I totally wanted to smack her. I'm like, ¿cómo te atreves a hablarle a tu madre así?
I didn't feel like that. Because I worked with teens, that was my job. Like, it felt super realistic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super, super realistic. And I could empathize with, her knowing that she's going through all this inner turmoil. She's trying to figure out where she belongs in life and also where she belongs within her family, it seems like, and how to, I guess, kind of bridge those things to do something that she enjoys and that she's going to continue to enjoy as she grows older and starts adulting more. And I can understand maybe a mother reading this and like really empathizing with the mom character. But maybe I would hope that if a mom read this, might actually also start to empathize with Heidi's character as well.
And just to point something out, she also published this in Spanish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, if you were to share this with your mom who may have immigrated here from, you know, a Spanish-speaking country, this might be a great book.
Or had you young,
mm-hmm. yeah. Might be a great book for her to read with you and talk about it.
So, Jen, what were your thoughts?
This book did its number one job of dragging me.
I was just
all like, God dang, like, this is a drag. This is a call-out. This book is a call-out to me. But I enjoyed it. I really liked the little details in the back from the Chun-Li.
Oh, yes.
The Chun-Li plush, the little soup balls from, oh god, from Spirited Away, the Nintendo stuff, Pokemon, Super Mario. I thought that was really cute. I really did enjoy it, and there was moments where I felt a little bit of frustration with the main character, as you did, Sarah, but also, like, having dealt with my sister, who's at that stage, she's gonna be 17 this year, and just her attitude and everything, and just reflecting back on how I was just like, I understand her, and I was sympathetic with her as well, because it's frustrating being at that age and not knowing what you're gonna do. I'm older and I still don't know what I'm gonna do. So I was just like, ugh, too real.
Right? Yeah.
But it's, I very much enjoyed it. It was a quick read. I do like the fact that it's very easy to follow because we have read some books where it's kind of hard to tell where the paneling goes.
Yeah.
This one does a really good job of it. There are moments though where the text box switches, and for a moment I got confused, like, as to who was talking and who wasn't, or like whether it was a thought bubble or if it was them or if it was speech. So that was like, it changes from white to black to blue, and I'm just like, for a moment, like, I would have to read it and just be like, is this a thought bubble or is she talking? The artwork itself is really cute, but it's a bit, there seems to be, a problem with proportion. Like, at one point she's as tall as the fridge. And I mean, there are fridges that are about as tall as people. But that's just like an artwork thing, and people have different art styles and stuff like that, and sometimes it's not their cup of tea, sometimes it is. I really like the coloring though.
Yeah.
The pastels is really, really nice. It's super, it makes it soft, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned it before in the podcast before that I don't like the current monochrome style going on with a lot of books and TV shows and movies where there's no color saturation at all.
So it's like a blue filter or some shit?
It all looks gray.
Okay.
Man of Steel, every Batman book since Nolan took over, and then left, basically all of DC's lineup. It's all what like gray, basically. So I always appreciate a very colorful comic. Mm-hmm. But the story is super relatable, I think, to either parents who could be reading it or to young women or just women in general who are just like, hey, I've been through this, or I've done this, or I've known someone like this. I like that. That's super cool.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like it could be all ages, but I think there's a couple of swear words, which if I had a kid, I would not mind them reading this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
'Cause that, you know, that could be just like a little sprinkle of bad language. But as far as the content goes, I think it's really relevant for actually preteens to teens to actually read it as well. So, are we ready to review this book?
Yeah.
Oh, rate. I'm sorry. Rate this book?
Well,
Buke. Mm-hmm. I swear I speak English. This is Sarah, and I'm going to give it tres conchas. I really, really like it. It's only three because I don't know what's going to happen with the glasses yet.
Yeah.
I still don't know anything about the glasses, yeah, except she has them in her possession now. So it's only tres conchas. I definitely would want to follow up with the story and see what's going on and what happens and what kind of adventures or misadventures arise from this.
So this is Kristen. I just wanted to, before I rated the book, in the back of Magic Glasses, there is a little bit about the two creators, Melina and Jean. And it talks about how they met and how it's been really magical that they both share the same vision. But some information that I thought is really cool and interesting that they shared was that it says, we are both daughters of immigrants, and we both know what it's like to grow up with what some may consider nothing and essentially make magic with it. We created the Magic Glasses so that we can share our story with young women all over. We would like to reach as many young women as possible, especially in underserved communities. We hope our story will build and encourage confidence in these young women and help inspire them to pursue and achieve their goals. And I really love that, reading that and knowing that that is kind of the motivation behind Magic Glasses. And I've spoken to Melina about what her vision is and what she wants to do. She is from Los Angeles area. She's from the Watts area. And she actually is really interested in opening a comic book shop or something of that sort in Watts, because there's nothing there like that. And she and I have had conversations about access and how important that is in the comic book industry to communities of underserved populations. So I really want to highlight that, that she and Jean are super, super motivated to, like she says, just get this out to as many young girls and members of underserved communities as they can. And so hopefully people will hear our podcast and want to read the book for themselves. And I also give Magic Glasses three conchas. I really enjoyed the story. I really really thought that it was super, super realistic. I could definitely see girls that I've worked with in the past saying these things. I know in my own relationship with my mom, I would say things like, why is she always nagging me? She wants me to do this. She wants me to do that. And why can't she just leave me alone? I would highly recommend it as well. And I think I agree with you, Sarah, that if it could be all ages, but definitely I would say more preteen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, preteen.
Preteen, yeah. I would say 12 and up.
Comics fall under that category.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck in between two or three conchas.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because I have an idea of what the Magic Glasses are.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not something... It's just briefly mentioned towards the end.
Yeah.
And that bugs me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I like the story. I very much do. And I like the coloring. And the artwork is pretty cute. But it's... That kind of bugs me. And I think I'm gonna go with two conchas. For right now, but I do recommend the book. It's really cute, and I want to see where it goes, where Heidi goes, what resolution she finds, if she finds a resolution, mm-hmm. because that's what I find compelling about stories like this, is that they're kind of there's no definite answer,
yeah,
kind of thing, and if there is an answer, it might be an answer to you, but it might be an answer for somebody else,
right?
Kind
yeah.
of thing. So. I'm curious as to what is in store for Heidi, what resolution she comes to, but for right now, I'm going to give it 2 conchas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to just point out that on our panels, a lot of times we talk about how creators write Latino characters, but don't really add any Latino culture or any kind of storyline that is specifically Latino or could be recognized by a Latino Latinx reader. And I would say, like, there's so many different things in this storyline that as Latinos, definitely. We can read it and identify 100% with. I mean, just the struggle with religion and where that falls. And, you know, I think, I don't know, about you and, for you two, but I know that I grew up in a household, but not my mother, but my grandmother said the rosary every single day and had a book of prayers that she read every single day. And mm-hmm. when I spent the night, I would, you know, sleep next to her and I would have to go through it and I wouldn't say it, but I would listen to her and stuff. And so that was a big presence in my life and, as a young girl. And so, I really just highly, highly, highly recommend that if you are looking for books that not only have Latino characters, but also there's more of the culture and stuff that are involved in the storyline, that Magic Glasses definitely hits that criteria.
Oh, yeah, definitely. like her room has to be the one that has most detail in it. Because from her background, the clothes thrown everywhere, the little nerd culture. But when she's walking down the stairs, there's a cross, mm-hmm. and there's a picture of her in her graduation yeah. outfit. And I was just mm-hmm. like, my God, this is totally like in my living room. Like, cause that's literally what our living room is just a bunch of crosses and a bunch of graduation photos.
Yeah.
And some flowers here and there. Like, or like, that's literally how our living room looks. And I thought that was really cool.
And the characters, You're not just told are Latino, but they are all some varying shade of brown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, because I know that in some books, even though they have a Latino name or you're told in some of the dialogue, you were hard pressed to actually look at them and see any kind of Latino feature.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, what I really love is her mom's hair. That's in a bun.
That was my grandmother's hair.
That's my mom's hair.
Oh my gosh, that was my grandmother's hair my entire childhood until she got a little bit older and couldn't take care of it anymore and cut it all off. But I would sit there in the bedroom and watch my grandmother put her hair in a bun every single day. Mm-hmm.
That's what my mom's hair is so long, but every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every day she brushes it out.
Does she put hers in a hairnet?
No, she doesn't.
My grandmother wears a hairnet.
No, sometimes she braids it, sometimes she doesn't.
Oh, okay.
She sleeps better when she braids it, but it's a lot of effort to braid all that hair.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, it also makes it easier to comb.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, that's, the hair bun. The hair mm-hmm. bun is, I appreciated those little details.
Yes.
I meant to ask, is there a minimum for an issue of pages? Like, an issue has to have a minimum of, what, 25 pages? Or is there, like, do you guys know?
A minimum?
Or a maximum?
I don't know if there's, like, specific maximum minimum. I know industry standard is about 24, 26, I think.
Okay. No, I was just wondering.
Yeah.
It all depends. I mean, after a certain point, you're going to need something more than staples. You're gonna need, like, binding and stuff.
Yeah.
You could call it, that's a single issue right there. Mm-hmm. It'll look like a book, but you can call it a single issue. It just depends. But yeah, like the industry standard Marvel DC Image stuff, it's anywhere, I think, not 20, but like 30 to 40 or something like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because 80 pages is considered a lot. It's like, that's an annual.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, just wondering, because I was thinking, you know, how much further she could have taken the story before she cut us off.
Gotcha. Well, she is self-published. She could do whatever she wanted.
Yeah, she
can
do what she wants.
Yeah, totally.
Cut it off right in the middle, man. Who cares? Your story. It's how you want to tell it.
Exactly. All right, guys. We are not only reviewing the Magic Glasses. What else are we reviewing, guys?
So today, we are, our second books, that we're reviewing actually are part of our Juntos y Fuertes, segment of the show. And these are books that, Sarah, you picked up where? At the Asian Comics Expo?
Yeah, talk about a throwback. This was like 2 years ago? Maybe at the beginning when we first were thinking about...
About a year ago.
Yeah. I think it was a bit over a year ago. Yeah. It was the Asian Comics Expo, Asian Comic Con, that was taking place at the Asian American Museum in, LA. And I met the artist and the creator and writer of Raven Choi, which is this book. I picked up the first issue there. And then, we saw her, and then I said, oh, we should review it. I picked it up like years and years, eons ago. It's written by Shakita L. Smith, and, I wanted to pick up the rest of them, but I didn't really fully pursue where to find her, and it just so happened that she was at Comic-Con Revolution, so we were able to pick up, issue 2 and 3, which are the only issues available right now. But she did get a chance to show us that she wants to make this into a movie. Mm-hmm. So there is a trailer of the movie on YouTube that we will post on her page.
It's it's 14-minute short film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. We were able to see it. Was it 14 minutes? It just felt like a trailer to me.
No, what we saw was a trailer, but okay. She has like a 14-minute short
film. Okay, I see. Okay, I have to look at that because we just saw the trailer while we were there. She streamed it for us. The cool thing about her is, she went on to explain that she self-published her book. She wrote it. And she she has never met the artist or mm-hmm. the letterer.
The colorist. No, I think.
The colorist, the artist, and the letterer. Mm-hmm. She actually outsources them. I think, the artist is from Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And she was also, at a panel that she was, moderating called How to Make a Comic on a Shoestring Budget.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really ingenious of her. She actually has, t-shirts and jewelry that are worn throughout the mm-hmm. comic book. So I thought that was really good how she kind of, hit all her points.
Yeah. So Shakita is actually a force to be reckoned with when it comes to independent publishers. She is the CEO of Shiro Comics. And you can find information about Shiro Comics at shirocomics.com. And on their About Us page, it says, for decades in the world of film and comics, the female voice has gone missing, silenced even. Women have been replaced to being the sidekick, the girlfriend, the afterthought. Growing tired of being ignored, growing tired of countless panel discussions, growing tired of waiting for inclusion, we've created our own universe, the universe of the Shiro. In this universe, the woman is Alpha. In this universe, the woman is Omega. In this universe, the woman is Almighty. Men are welcomed into our universe with open arms and often play a major role in our narratives. However, it is our goal to explore, acknowledge, and provide intriguing stories from the female perspective featuring female protagonists. We seek to set forth a movement that will help fill the void that has failed women in film and comics for far too long. So whether you are male, female, or somewhere in between, we encourage you to cross over into the Shiro universe, a not-so-fireplace where pink is power. So that's why we're sharing this information in the Juntos y Fuertes segment of the show, because Shiro Comics is definitely run by a black woman who saw a need and is out there filling it in the comic book industry. And we definitely think that she could take all the support she could get.
Absolutely. And meeting her, she's another, like, you can see the...
She's very passionate about what she
exactly.
does, and I love it.
Yeah.
She, like you said, she saw a need for something, and she's out there doing it
mm-hmm.
and filling in that void
yeah.
with her own works. And I think that's admirable. She's really, really cool. And the Raven Choi, she has book one translated in Korean. And she's working on it getting translated into Spanish
mm-hmm.
as
yes.
well. She's super cool, and I loved all her shirts too.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
Cool.
I wanted the was it Pussy Kills or
yes.
Pussy, but then she didn't
Pussy
have my
Kills.
Size.
Yeah.
what did you wanted the bougie nerd?
Bougie nerd, yeah.
Bougie nerd, yeah.
I totally could see you in a bougie nerd.
I want that. I didn't dress like this. Now I'd be a bougie nerd.
Yeah, she has a lot of clever ideas, I think. Just to see her little puns on the t-shirt, I was like amazed. And then the main character, Raven Choi, she wears a necklace with the little raven as a pendant, and she actually has those available for sale as well.
Oh, I didn't even notice that in the book.
Yeah.
yes, I'm Kristen, the one who never looks at the pictures.
But the story itself, it's really great. I really enjoyed it. It kind of opens up kind of in a scenario where she is in kind of a combat gear, and then it kind of breaks off into her being in therapy. But the thing is that this character, Raven, her parents were killed basically in front of her. She has to deal with that trauma, and there's kind of some kind of secret espionage kind of going on where there's a tape that people are looking for and that has the identity of a mole in the U.S. government that is making plans with Korea. And they were trying to get this information, and they ended up killing, like, everybody on the train except for this little girl with their little teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who Raven is. She actually was taken to live with her grandmother, but because this was so dangerous, and of course, it was a professional hit, so they were in fear that they would actually get to her here in the States, so they sent her to her father's best friend in Korea. So, fortunately, they were thinking that the grandmother would join them, but she was never
okay. Able. Quick, give me all the spoilers.
I'm just like,
she's just going page by page, telling you the whole story.
But anyways, I think she gets adopted because she ended up getting their last name.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives most. She grows up in Korea.
Yeah. So I love spy stories. I love like. Double agent stories, like James Bond and all that kinds of stuff. So this storyline really intrigued me as far as like there is a mystery there. We don't know, who is going after who. We don't know who the mole is. We don't know, what's going to happen, who's involved, because there are a couple of times in here where you think that somebody is trying to be helpful and it turns out that they're not. So as we were coming over, I was telling Jen that the story definitely falls right into lot of overly used and played tropes in movie, in TV, in comics. But, you know, some of those are overly played and used because they work. And like I said, I enjoy spy films. I enjoy all that stuff. So I'm definitely invested and I want to know what happens. But I also felt like the book was very... like formulaic in that you kind of see what's coming. There was not really any surprises. And I was for a spy book or for espionage book, I would like more surprise.
I like the little things. Like the relationship with her adoptive parents. Like when she's on the bus or train and there's this little Korean kid who grabs her skin and rubs it and says, "Mom, it's not coming off."
Yeah.
Like, cause, you know, it's unusual. I like the little kind of relationship that we see with her and her dad. The very little bit that we do see. The pace, I love the pace of the storytelling for sure. Cause I just finished reading another one that they were trying to pack too much into it. And I was like, oh, I'm already dizzy.
Yeah.
Like I highlighted areas to try to differentiate, the dialogue and it just wasn't working for me.
Yeah.
So because I read this first, I was like, oh, the pace is too kind of slow. But then I read that one and I was like, no, I think I appreciate this more.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
So the relationship that you say that you enjoy was one of the things that I was like, I couldn't buy into it. I couldn't, all they just said was like, go to live with these people and he's your dad's friend or whatever. And like, we didn't get any really background. And when she was actually living there, I didn't see anything that made me buy into the fact that, other than the fact that maybe she had nowhere else to go, but, I felt a disconnect with her relationship with her adopted family. And I wanted to maybe see or, have something shown to me that made me buy into why she was there. So, well, and I know that it was not why she's there, because we knew she's there because it was not safe for her to be at home, but, I don't know, I just felt, and maybe it was supposed to be that way, which would be her motivation to want to come back. And because this, at the end of the day too, this is kind of like a vengeance story. And so, maybe that, was playing into that as like, you know, I never really belonged here and I want to go back to find myself or to find answers, which is what she says multiple times.
So I enjoyed it. I enjoy a good espionage comic, movie, film. It definitely, reading it, and then I remember she saying that this was originally a screenplay. Made me like, yeah, it reads, it's like you're reading a movie.
That makes sense, actually. That makes sense of the whole, like I was saying, I told Jen it felt very formulaic, and that makes sense that if it started out as a screenplay, that it definitely follows those, like, you know, formula acts that, I mean, those happen in comics too, but it, like, that makes a lot of sense.
So it reads like a movie, whereas, whereas Watchmen, the Watchmen movie itself had the thing where it was just like, dude, you just literally copied the comic book onto the, onto the big screen.
Right.
This is more, I feel like I would, cause I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed it a lot, but I feel like, yeah, this is definitely a screenplay. This is something that it would be, a lot better if I could see it in motion. And when she showed us that trailer, for it, I forgot to go back and watch the 14-minute short film. It looked amazing.
Yeah,
it looked
actually.
Great.
I was like, when I saw that there was a 14-minute, I was like, oh my gosh, I would be interested in seeing that because I feel like I wanted more action. I don't know. I don't know what it is that I'm missing.
That's actually true.
Yeah.
And that one, that's actually what I was going to mention right now, that you just touched on. You said, I wish there was a bit more action.
Yeah.
And yes, that was one thing that I wanted to touch upon is, the actual kind of combat, panels. I felt like I needed a little more. I feel like that they're trying to tell us that she is a, she's kind of a master of her, of her fighting style, but I'm not seeing it translated in the images.
Like, and what I found interesting about that too, which was a character development, was that we were shown and told that, yeah, she's very good at this, so much so that she can actually teach it. But then her adopted brother says, but you hate doing that. So that was actually really interesting to me, and I wanted to kind of maybe, I would like for that to actually be a little bit more resolved, because right now, all I know about her is that, you know, her parents are killed and she wants answers, but we've skipped all this other stuff, and there's little things here and there that are kind of hitting upon character traits and personality traits, but we don't get a lot of explanation.
Mm-hmm. And that's all well in a movie, because in the movie, like, sometimes you barely get a hint of something, but it's constant motion. It's constant mm-hmm. motion. And I think this is more of like an artwork thing, whereas, cause I'm kind of thinking of Sheriff of Babylon right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. that we didn't get, like, the story was pretty good, but we didn't get a lot of backstory for some stuff, but the portrayal of movement was incredible in that comic. It's mm-hmm. really good. And I think we might, that would be really cool in this comic if we had more of a, and again, it's the thing about art styles and stuff like mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. because whereas you said that the fighting style, you didn't quite get a lot of movement, I got a lot of good movement from it, because to me it looked a bit like I don't know if you guys have ever seen like instruction manuals for
stuff like that.
That's what it is. So in my head I could see that movement mm-hmm. and so it was a little bit about like kind of following it and what you're familiar with reading. So I kind of really like how the artist drew her when she was like fighting, because mm-hmm. I could see that movie. I knew what she was trying to do, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
But I think it's a well-written one. It's super good and it's super interesting. Maybe a little heavy on the trope side, but you can't make comics, you can't do anything
without hitting a trope. Yeah.
Without hitting a trope, it's just about how you deliver it.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I also like the different personalities of each character.
Oh yeah,
they're a bit pronounced, but I like that. They all have their own, like, in my head, they all had their own way of speaking. Mm-hmm. Like from her best friend to that bounty hunter guy, mm-hmm. to that other guy who owns the agency, mm-hmm. To that guy who was in charge of the missions and stuff. So I really like that.
Speaking of how you said that everyone has their own way of speaking, Jen, as she was reading it, said that she realized that of the Korean characters, all the men's dialogue was written in perfect English, but the women's was broken.
Yeah, the women was broken English, yes.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I found that super interesting.
I have to admit that I did find that a bit annoying. I kind of want to talk to her and ask, like, what was the thought process behind that? Mm-hmm. And I would really love to hear it. But it, just for me, it's always been a bit annoying, trying to read broken English. And I know it's a way of communicating how someone talks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a really cool thing, because everybody talks differently, in the comic as well, and kind of assigning them roles as well as, like voices and stuff like that. But I have to admit that was a bit annoying.
And the reason why I liked it so much was because I just came from reading another book who everybody's dialogue bubble just kind of blended with each other. So that's probably why I'm like, this is better.
Yeah, true. Cause when everybody speaks, like, again, it's the problem of like too much. What's the perfect balance kind of mm-hmm. thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sorry to cut you off, but for me, what I was saying is that when I saw the broken English, what it conveyed to me was, all the stereotypes that you see Asian characters in TV being portrayed, and you mm-hmm. see them as, I mean, the stereotype or the fetishized, docile Asian woman who doesn't speak English, and because she doesn't speak English, and you see this for a lot of other cultures too, who don't speak English, just because they don't speak English, people automatically assume that they're not intelligent. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was working with immigrant women at the at a shelter service, that there was a woman who, she was a freaking doctor, but because she couldn't speak English, was forced to take and because her doctor, her certificate or whatever didn't transfer over from her country, she was forced to be a maid at a hotel.
Oh wow.
And to talk to her, she was so intelligent, and she would tell me, it is so hard for me to be trying to communicate with people and to see the look in their face of just them thinking that I am not intelligent because I don't speak their language. Mm-hmm. And them not even knowing or even caring that I, you know, have all these, you know, degrees behind my name. But all they see is a housemaid who speaks Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, there was just some of like, and it could just be my own personal biases of when I see that, is that I just felt it made me think of like that that they were writing that character, that character was written like less intelligently, I guess.
I'm so sorry. I when you said something and I thought it was really interesting, so I just wrote it down.
Okay.
So I this is Sarah. I read the first issue long before I started to read the other two. But I read them after the last two I read after I read the other comic book that I keep complaining about.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of variant, shifts in the way I was reading it because of the other comic book.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a healthy thing or an unhealthy thing.
No, I mean, reading like some other comics and then comparing it with others, like that's like, everybody has their own ideas, but also like it's a matter of storytelling and how it is that you do it. This one was very, very clear. And again, like with Magic Classes and how their paneling was done, how the dialogue was done in this one was very clear as to who was speaking, where the storyline is going. And I admit, by the time I read the third book, I had figured out who the mole was. I can tell where the story is going, but I can appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to something like very convoluted, like sometimes how Jonathan Hickman's books can be like, I'm just like, oh my god, dude, get to the point. Get to the point. What is it? Like there's a difference between like, it's a manner of storytelling. And this book, what I really appreciate about this book is the fact that, yes, it's an espionage storyline that we can predict, but what I really like about it is that all the culture that's injected into it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that, I think that is really, really cool. And not only that, it's the fact, and I touched upon this in one of the panels that we spoke, is that it's nice to see yourself reflected in a story. And that's what this book does.
Mm-hmm.
It reflects a really smart, intelligent, and vengeful black woman who's out there and who's trying to get vengeance back for the murder of her parents. And it's tropey, yes, but who are the characters that you usually associate with that? It's white men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's cool to see a black woman in this role as well. And that's why I really appreciate, because the broken English Asian woman is, I admit, very kind of problematic. And I would like to hear what was her thought process behind that. But I enjoy the tropes. I like a good espionage book and film.
I was thinking, since Raven went when she was a young girl, I'm just assuming that she would be able to speak Korean.
Yeah.
So I would have been so simple to just have the a full sentence with an asterisk that said translated from Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have completely bypassed the whole stereotype feeling that I got when I was reading.
That is another thing, because, like, why are they speaking English?
Yeah, she grew up there. She was very small. I would say she was no older than, like, 7.
Well, because, like, when I'm home, I speak Spanish.
Right.
And, like, I hardly ever speak English with my mom, and even when I do, I mean, she's been living in the States for quite a while, and while she does have an accent, a very heavy accent, she can speak English pretty well.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing.
The sensation I got, and this is Sarah, is that everything is mostly in Korean, and we're just reading it in English, but her friend tries to speak English to her for her to learn. So it's sort of like when sometimes Frank...
So does it say that anywhere that it's translated from Korean?
No, I don't think it...
Oh, I was wondering if I just missed it.
No.
Okay.
No.
That's my assumption while
gotcha. Reading it.
Okay.
And my assumption... Because see, then I went and created all these little things, backstories. So like...
Oh, and that actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. But just as a writer, then let the reader know that that's what's happening.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. For me, it felt like everybody was speaking in Korean while they were in the household, whereas when her friend came would hang out with her, they were speaking in English because maybe she's trying to practice her English, which is what happens with a lot of people when I'm like, I'm trying to speak Spanish, but they're trying to speak to me in English because they're practicing their English, which sometimes happens with Frank, and I'm like, dude, I speak Spanish. but it's true. Like, some people, they try to speak in a language that they're learning.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is why true. I think that there's such a pronounced accent when the friend talks. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it could be that when the mom is talking to her when she's in the garden, this is kind of giving away some plot points, is that maybe she's speaking to her in the language she thinks she'll be comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is a matter of clarification too.
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah.
Where, when they were talking inside the house, was it being translated from Korean or was it not?
Yeah.
Or,
because
because then it's an abrupt shift. You're right. You're
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because the feeling I got was everybody spoke perfect English except for the two women.
Okay. Got it.
And that felt really like stereotypical,
I totally get that. And I think that's one of the challenges people are going to face when they're going to be trying to tell their own story, or like you were saying, you want to see yourself in a comic book. Where in the Magic Glasses, there was very few, Spanish words too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's something that there is no formula for just yet, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt completely okay with it, only because that's what I made up in my
head.
Right,
yeah.
So, but yeah, I see that, guys. If you're gonna make a comic book, that multi-language comic book is gonna be a challenge to portray that while people are reading it.
In your conversations with her, did she happen to mention why she chose to set the comic in Korea, or to have Korean culture be a thing in?
No, but I'm dying to know. Okay. Like, I want to ask her, but I don't want to be inappropriate, so.
Okay. I didn't talk to her very long, because when I was walking by her table, I was on my way to something, and I said, oh, yeah, we have your book, and whatever, whatever, and apparently I spoiled your surprise.
Every time.
But, yeah. So I didn't have a chance to really talk to her, and I think there was at one point she was trying to sell me a shirt, but she didn't have the size I wanted. And so then I was like, oh, I'll be right back. So these are all questions that, maybe we can even just shoot her a quick email, because we have her card here and it has her contact information.
Exactly. But definitely this is a very passionate project for sure.
Mm-hmm.
She has like I said, she hits like so many points. It's like she's hitting you once, but she's doing one of those like hits all over your body really fast. Like, I guess what Trunks does.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen her at multiple conventions. It's not the first convention I've seen her at. So she is out there hustling and working. And like we said, she is, a black woman who is the CEO of her very own comic publishing company. And that, in and of itself is amazing AF.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, like, it was impressive. I mean, I was just walking by, and it was so impressive. Like, she went and told me the story, and it's in three different, gonna be in three different languages. Mm-hmm. There's merchandise based on the characters in the
freaking
comic
short film.
And there's a short film. There's a trailer.
Yeah. That's really
and,
cool.
And, the trailer is in English, but it's, translated, into Korean.
Yeah, Korean subtitles.
So it's like, dude, like, where do you stop? Like, she just keeps going and going and going. I mean, when you think you got it, there's more merch, there's more stuff, there's more appearances, there's panels. I mean, she's out there.
Yeah,
she's
freaking translating it into Spanish.
Right.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
That's super cool. And I believe she said that she's trying to, like, go to a convention in Mexico.
Like, yes, oh, wow. In Mexico City.
Yeah,
yes.
In Mexico City. And I was just like,
she's like, I wanted to get this book out in Spanish so I can go to the Mexico City, Conque, I think it's Conque. It's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
It just happened, actually, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So she didn't get to go, but I'm just like, dude, I just found out about this Conque like a year ago, and I didn't even know what it was, and she's already, like, trying to be there. I'm like, what? That's, like I said, she's on it. You know, she's taking notes and she's taking numbers for sure.
So just a reminder, you can find all the information you would ever want to know about Shiro Comics and Raven Choi, the book series that we reviewed today, at Shiro Comics, shero comics.com. And I think on the back of that book, there's also some, like, is that another book that's coming? Oh,
no,
that's the one.
Two.
That's number book two. Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. But I think she has on the website, I think there might be other projects that they were going to be, publishing and the things that are planned. So I think that, if you are interested at all about what she has coming, up in the future, definitely check out the website because it seems that she has a lot of information up there. Yeah, there's some Raven Choi chapter 3 came out February, and that's the most recent thing that they have on here. So.
Oh, right on. Cool. So, are we ready to rate it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, I don't know why I looked at the penis. this is Sarah, and I think I'm gonna go with 3 conchas, just because I got the full extent of the story, the way that I think, you know what, I just loved the way my brain handled all the information, so, it's something that I wanna know what happens next, although, like you said, we already kinda know who the mole is, but I really wanna know, how she grows as a character and handling the situation, so I'm gonna give it 3 conchas.
Okay, this is Kristen, and even from the things that I was saying that I was critiquing or that were problematic for me, like I said in the beginning, I love spy stories, I love espionage stories, and I do love that over these 3 issues, it did, at the end, get me hooked that I want to know what happens. And I think at the end of the day, that's what a successful comic should do, is at the end of the issue, you want to keep reading. So I will also give it 3 conchas because for whatever things that I nitpicked on in the book, the just amazing passion that Shakita has and the work that she's put into this project, I think garners a 3 conchas rating for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm stuck again. And because I am stuck, I am going to give it 2.5 conchas.
Okay.
Because I, as you said, I still want to keep reading this.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like this will get the 3 conchas and plus once the series is over.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
It's one of those things where I think we'll be, like, read better once it's kind of in a graphic novel format.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, once it's in a graphic novel format, it's, like, the how you can continue it is going to be stupendous. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's, like, it's a screenplay, and screenplays themselves have natural pauses and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. Each book ends, like, like you're trying to catch your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and then you're jumping onto another scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. That is very much really cool, and I can't wait to read it. But I think that once it's done, it's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, for right now, it gets gets 2.5
Kilos. And I can't wait till both of you guys are shocked that the person you thought was the mole was not the mole.
I mean, by the end of the third book, it's basically confirmed. It's pretty much confirmed, but if there's a surprise in store for me, then I can't wait to be surprised.
Yep,
excellent. Yeah. All right, well, that was our rating, guys. All right, guys, now it's time for On My Radar.
So, On My Radar is actually a book that has not come out yet. But this was from East LA Cape. And when he told us about this, I literally gasped when he did. So, this comic is called Heroes and Lovers. Mm. And it is a telenovela stylized comic.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I can't wait.
I cannot wait. And I'm trying to remember, I think his name is Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And he also does another comic called Brother Crow, which we picked up at East LA Cape. But I believe the book hasn't come out yet. But the idea itself is amazing, and it's written by a Latino man. So that in itself is already why it's on my radar. It's, and I honestly cannot wait until this comes out.
Oh my god, me too.
I actually don't know. I think he's kickstarting it, or...
I think he is kickstarting it, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, I also went to his table, at East LA Cape, and I'm just like, where is this book? Like, he pitched it, and I was like, I really want to read it now. Like,
mm-hmm.
like, he shouldn't have even told me. Like, now I'm just like, when is it out? When is it out?
Tell me, please!
We need to know, because as soon as it comes out, man, I'm there.
I'm hooked.
We're there. We're mm-hmm. so ready. We're so ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know when it's coming out, and we're ready for this.
Definitely. It just says coming soon.
what a tease. But yes, that is also on my radar for sure. It sounds very cool. Very, very cool.
Okay, so this is Kristen, and what is on my radar is actually some books that will be coming out next week at your local comic shop. I think you may remember when I was talking about, I think it was on my radar many moons ago, when there was a Batman Elmer Fudd crossover.
Yes, the Tom King one.
Yes, which was really good. I highly recommend it.
So good.
But there have been since then multiple DC Hanna-Barbera crossovers.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but isn't Elmer Fudd and Batman nominated for the Eisner Award?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For I guess short comic, like one shot
maybe. Yeah, I don't know what it was nominated for, but yes, I do remember seeing it. It was so good. I really liked it. I loved it so much. And Tom King, I mean, you put Tom King's name on anything and it sounds like hotcakes.
Yep.
Since then there has been there was a Wonder Woman, and who was the crossover with Wonder Woman? I don't remember.
Not the recent Young Animals one,
was
right?
It Tasmania?
Well, there was a Tasmanian Devil one.
But that wasn't Wonder Woman.
There's been a Looney Tunes one, which was where the
Elmer Fudd
one.
Yeah, so Elmer Fudd is Looney Tunes, yeah.
There was another one with some other Hanna-Barbera.
Wasn't it the
Martian? There was Martian? Jetsons.
The Jetsons.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The Martian with Martian Manhunter? No, I thought.
Yeah, but that's Looney Tunes.
Oh, I see.
So the Jetsons is just Hanna-Barbera, isn't it? Well, anyway, it was not a crossover. But anyway, there's been some Hanna-Barbera stuff that has come out over the past year, and there are now going to be some DC crossovers coming out next week that I am all about. Oh my gosh. I remember these cartoons from being a kid. When I was telling Jen about the titles, she just looked at me with a blank stare on her face because she has no idea who these people are. But hold on to your britches, you Gen Xers that are listening, because this is what's coming out on May 30th at your local comic shop. Flash and Speed Buggy.
I don't know who Speed Buggy is.
Shut the F up right now. Black Lightning and Hong Kong Fooey. And then my favorite, Aquaman and Jabberjaw. Oh my God. I am so excited about these books. And I hope you will continue to tune in to Comadre and Comics on the next episode, because these two women have no idea who Jabberjaw, Hong Kong Fooey, or Speed Buggy are.
Hey, at least I have an excuse.
But yes, Sarah, this is like right up your age generation alley. So hey, I'm surprised that you don't know.
You guys didn't know who Mask was.
Who's Mask?
M-A-S-K.
Oh, no, I did. I did know. I just never watched it.
Okay.
I didn't. The most I have experience with those are like, that era is Transformers.
But Hanna-Barbera shows were like so freaking, like they were everywhere. Okay.
Yes, Speed Buggy. I am familiar. I just didn't know it was called Speed Buggy.
Okay. So Jabberjaw is the big shark.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. And Hong Kong Fooey is like this dog. This dog with like long, black ears, and he is a kung fu master. And he would always say, Hong Kong Fooey!
Oh my God, yes! Okay, it's all coming back to me now. Man, that took a bit. I didn't know their names. It was during the time that I watched these that I only spoke Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause I don't think I had even started like kindergarten or even really grasping English. But yes, I am familiar with these characters.
Okay. So, okay, now that we're friends again, there is just, oh my God. I'm looking at the cover art right now. I'll have to share this on Instagram and on our Facebook, but like, it's the long-haired Aquaman, but honestly, I don't even care because Jabberjaw is like standing behind him and like, it looks like Aquaman is like leaning up against him. It's just so awesome.
That is so cool. Oh my God. I don't even know how they wrap their mind around creating something so awesome like that. Like you say it out loud and it sounds kind
and
of
it sounds
like,
silly.
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't Batman and Elmer Fudd sound completely ridiculous?
Yes.
And
totally.
It is now an Eisner nominated book.
Wow.
And it was amazing.
Oh, looks like shoot. He's trying to hug Aquaman into a lover's pose.
It does. And I'm all about it.
I mean, it is.
Okay, so it says, yes, popular characters from 1970s era Hanna-Barbera cartoons. So these are all one-shot team-ups. And we are getting the Aquaman Jabberjaw. I think there's actually a short little story at the end of some of them. At the end of the Aquaman Jabberjaw, oh my gosh. At the end of the Aquaman Jabberjaw book, it includes a short story with Captain Caveman meeting Shazam.
Okay, I know who Captain Caveman is.
Captain Caveman!
Okay, he was awesome. I remember him. That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. So I cannot wait. These are the three that are coming out next week. I'm actually not certain if there's going to be more coming out in the future.
I feel like there is.
But I mean, these have been gold for DC, and I'm here for all of it. I just cannot wait. I'm searching to see if there's any that are coming up in my.
Do you know who's writing them? Because with the Looney Tunes one, they put like some good talent.
Well,
that.
The Aquaman Jabberjaw is written by Dan Abnett.
Oh,
and.
Yeah,
Flash Speed Buggy is, what, Kindle edition is by Scott Lobdell. So I'm assuming that all the editions are by him. So I don't know what that actually means, but the information for who's writing the other one isn't readily available here. Oh, Hong Kong Fooey is set to clash with DC Comics, but it doesn't actually say who's writing it. I'd have to do a little bit more
digging.
So yeah, I don't want to waste time as I'm looking on Google, because you just have one short, small little week to wait, and you can just have it in your own little hot hand. So definitely go out and buy it if you are interested. You can even call your local comic shop now and reserve a copy so that you will not miss what is sure to be the most amazing comic book ever. Crossover series, yes. So that is what is on my radar.
Excellent. So that was on my radar. I guess that brings us to the end of this episode, guys. Where can they find us? What are we doing? What's going on?
So, they can find us at the Tia Chucha event.
Yes.
A festival of words.
Uh-huh. It's June 2nd, which is a Saturday. And it's a little bit later. I think it says that it starts at 2?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, 2 to 7, I think it was.
Ooh,
so
goes on late.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to seeing you guys. Are we going to have conchas?
It's
first come, first serve, guys.
Yeah, we're going to have conchas, but it's first come, first serve. So definitely come early if you want conchas.
Exactly. We will also have some of the books that we reviewed on previous episodes up for sale. And we will have swag for you guys as well.
Yes, we will. So until then, you can always catch us on, Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Or on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
We're on Facebook, and our email is comadresycomics@gmail.com. I would like to, also shout out Naveen. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Salutations to you. Anything else, guys?
Shout out to the brewery for this amazing tart beer that made Jen recollect the bile in her mouth from her 21st birthday.
Dude, next time I bring a weird beer, I'm just going to record you guys, because the faces you guys both made, they both drank at out of their cup at the same time, and it was like the funniest faces.
But definitely shout out to all of the listeners who have come up to us at conventions, at our tables, at the panels that we've done, and also customers who've come into Heidi Ho and said, oh my gosh, I listened to your podcast. Thank you so much for A, for listening, but B, for coming up to us and telling us that you listen, because honestly, every time it happens, I'm in complete and utter shock. So thank you so much.
Thank you to Armando from Café con Leche. He actually spoke to one of the guys that was at our panel early in the morning at 11 at Comic-Con Revolutions, and they had he was just so in awe that there was so much content out there that he wasn't aware of. So even if we just reach one person in a panel, it's just awesome to hear the feedback from that. Thank you so much for attending the panel. And thank you, Armando, for passing on that information to us.
Yes, definitely. That's amazing. At Free Comic Book Day, too, somebody said, oh, there's somebody who is a fan of yours and said that he has your pin from before and he has been listening. He didn't even meet you just today. He's been listening for a while. So that was super cool, too.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So, yeah, just come on up to us.
And comment online on social media. We are super responsive and always love hearing from you guys.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that has been our episode. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.